You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
We are here today on this historic Wednesday in November, following the amazing election yesterday of Donald Trump. That's here we are, and we're here today with Mr. Rod Bennett, a man with a sense of history, and being a Georgian who comes from a family that sided with the Union.
Right, from Tennessee, actually, although I lived a good portion of my life in Georgia.
Oh, okay. So, okay, being a Tennessee stock, but being from a family that sided with the Union, you know all about loss, right?
It's true. Yeah, the farm that I'm speaking to you from right now was invaded, raided, ripped off, everything of value carted off by both the Union and Confederate armies multiple times during the war.
So really?
It was hard to find a friend in those days, you know?
Yeah, well, yeah. So, we're not, you know, and it's looking back on sunny moments in our history like the Civil War that sort of gives you some perspective so that you can kind of come away from this election and say, things aren't that bad.
Well, I will confess to our listening audience right here at the beginning that Mark and I shared a morose-sounding Facebook post in the middle of the night, talking the whole thing over as it unfolded. And I confess to Mark that I really didn't want to do the show today. I hope that's not too much of a disappointment to you guys.
Well, that's all right, you know.
I think I drew the bad hand as the regular Wednesday afternoon host, so there was hardly any way we could avoid talking about this. But yeah. I certainly was not in the correct frame of mind to do it last night. I think I'm a little better. I've rallied.
Well, you know, what does a world of wonders is homebrewed Tennessee whiskey. And
it's true. It's true. And that are you suggesting that I may have been drinking this all over today?
Well, you know, it's
possible.
It's important to, you know, to have those kinds of things. The Persians,
a little of the recipe on hand. It's true.
The Persians used to debate everything twice, once when they were sober and then again when they were drunk. And there's
that
a certain
shows great certain, wisdom.
Yeah, there's certain wisdom to that. So
one of the best pieces of writing advice I ever got was from Stephen King, whose books I don't really care for. But Stephen King said, write drunk, revise sober.
Well, there is something to that. You know, you sort of get your muse starts cooking, and you get carried away.
Right.
You think you're a genius, and then you put it in a drawer. You come back the next day and you look it over and you think, I'm going to have to cut about 3/4 of this.
What was I thinking?
So what was
But sometimes there's inspired
like
stuff in there. So, I tried to talk Mark out of either out of doing the show or out of doing it with me. But like I say, I think I've rallied. I think we can maybe talk about it in a profitable way. I would like to think that we have listeners on several sides of the fence here. Before we started, probably be good for me to say that I was a never Trumper from day one.
Yeah,
and voted for a third party candidate.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
I suspect Mark made some sort of strategic calculation as well and voted for somebody who was less perfectly what he would have hoped for.
I voted for Mike Maturin, and
I thought
you know, he, if he'd only gotten another 57 million votes, he would have won. Yeah.
The offshore territories, maybe. Maybe all the votes are not in yet. Maybe we've still got several shiploads of absentee ballots to wait to come in.
If you forget about that 57 million vote advantage that Trump had, I mean, Maturin was right behind him.
It seems like that to me too.
Yeah. So I told my readers today. I said nobody's saying rigged, but we're all thinking it. So it would have been Maturin, for the want of 57 million votes, a mere 57 million.
Well, I told my daughter when she woke up this morning, whose opinions are maybe a little to the left of mine, that I told her somebody must have been messing around with the DeLorean and the sports almanac, honey, because we seem to have awakened in Biff world.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, he's running the country now. He's with a bimbo under each arm and in his casino.
Yeah, running the country, and he's got a Republican Congress completely, House and Senate.
That may prove to be a little less straightforward than he may be hoping.
Really?
And I think we can talk about that as we go on. In fact, one of the main things I'd like to talk about is how this affects the two parties, how this changes things. And I think it does change things pretty dramatically.
Yeah.
Almost to the point we may be looking at the sixth party system now? I think I lose track. I think it's the sixth party system. I mean, it's dramatic. For most dramatic election since Reagan, for sure. It was a little encouraging to hear him sound. He actually sounded like an adult for a few minutes when he stood up and.
I got to hand it to him. His acceptance speech and Hillary's concession speech were both good.
It's funny with Trump. You know, even now we keep hoping for the pivot. You know, Trump's finally going to start acting presidential. You know, now that he actually is the president.
It could happen, you know. I mean,
I wouldn't hold my breath. I mean, if he were capable of it, he'd have done it by now.
Yeah.
I fear he's not capable of it, which is why I voted for somebody else, guys. But anyway, I think Mark was sounding a little blue when I first spoke to him a few minutes ago. And I hope this cheers you up, and I think that maybe some of our listeners will like this perspective too. And that is, if it's any consolation, don't jump quickly to the conclusion that 50% of America is, quote, like Trump.
Because I don't think that.
All of the exit data shows that an actual majority of voters on both sides actively disliked the person that they voted for. And they did it holding their nose, as the old phrase goes.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's still bad, I suppose, but the number of enthusiastic Trumpers was relatively small. Amongst evangelicals who voted for him, like 4 out of 5 evangelicals voted for Trump. Some large number of them said that they strongly preferred somebody else and that they were mainly doing it because of pro-life and the Supreme Court. Yeah. Which I think is a bad strategy, but at the same time.
He's going to, there was up until like yesterday, a press release on his webpage talking about, you know, issues of concern to Catholics, you know, the pro-life things. And that's gone off of his website.
Yeah, I don't know what to make of that. I mean, it's a little too obvious.
I've never believed for 1 second that he cared about pro-life issues, so it doesn't surprise me at all.
Right. For the record, I don't think he cares anything about that issue at all. But at any rate, like I said, if it's any consolation, I don't think we should leap quickly to the conclusion that America is like Donald Trump and that this election proves it.
I agree with that. I agree with that.
That's a mistake.
Yeah. Well,
in fact, I would say that the takeaway from the fact that just about everybody came out holding their nose yeah. shows that something has gone terribly wrong with how we choose nominees, not so much with how we choose presidents.
Yeah.
I think it was G.K. Chesterton who said, the people whose choice really counts are the people who decide what gets voted on and who.
Yeah.
And that, I think, is the great unexplored territory that a lot of us need to be focusing on, is reform in the area of how the candidates are chosen and how the nominee is chosen, because that's yeah. where things went wrong. This election really was lost back in the summer when Trump clinched the nomination, because, I mean, that guaranteed that one of these two miscreants that nobody likes was going to sit in Washington's seat one way or the other. And that's when the election was lost, not yesterday.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to that. But, you know, at the end of the day, ultimately, it's, you know, in a democracy, you get the government you deserve.
Joseph LeMaistre right. said that, I think, and I think yeah. he's probably right. A lot of people yeah. take it as a harsh judgment, but and I suppose it is in some ways, but essentially that's just a reaffirmation of democracy.
Yep. Well,
you know, democracy is the idea that the government should reflect the people's wishes, either actively or passively.
Right.
In other words, when you choose to let it run on its own and not to intervene, you're also making a choice.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we are up against a break, but we will be right back. You're listening to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea. We're here today with Rod Bennett, and we will be back doing the autopsy on election 2016 right after this.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
I'm your host, Mark Jay, and we are here today with Rod Bennett. We're doing the autopsy on election 2016. If you want to join us, give us a call. We're at 1-573-4-BREAD-4, 1-573-4-BREAD-4. And you can also text us at that number, or you can tweet us at Breadbox Media. We've been discussing, you know, the sort of putting the election in perspective, and I think one of the important things to do, of course, is really do that. I'm hearing from people who are just panic stricken about the outcome of the election. I've heard from a lot of people who are panic stricken about the outcome of the election, and you know, no, it's not good. But at the same time, you know, bear in mind, I mean, where this is not Nero. We still, in fact, live in a free society. We still have an entire constitution, Bill of Rights, a whole system of government that is all still in place. It's still functioning. It's still protecting you.
And designed to thwart dramatic moves.
Right, yeah. This is the thing, is you know, winning is easy, governing is hard, is the old saying. And that's still really it. So people who are worried about, you know, and believe me, I'm among them, those people who are worried about what this erratic, unstable, sociopathic narcissist might do, it's still worth recognizing that there are checks and balances.
You mentioned Nero. Nero right. was killed by his own Praetorian Guard.
Right.
I'm not saying anybody's going to kill Donald Trump.
No,
but
no.
Nero actually was an autocrat, literally.
Right. And
with
there were
absolute
even checks
power.
On,
supposedly.
Right.
But the army is there. You know, in other words, I've heard a lot of loose talk about how, you know, Trump's got the nuclear codes and whatever. When the hits the fan and stuff, the people who usually intervene are career military officers who prevent loony stuff from happening.
Right.
And
God willing, you know,
there's only so far even an absolute dictator can go before some. Well, I realize there's one prominent exception to this in the 1940s, but I don't think we're anywhere close to that.
Right, we're not close to that. But, we still got, you know, a system of checks and balances. And, it'll be, one of the things that's anybody's guess right now is what a Republican-controlled Congress, House and Senate, will do in response to him. But one of the things that's also worth recognizing, of course, is that some of the guy's biggest enemies are in his own party.
Right. In a way, he'll almost be a man without a party because he's burned so many of his bridges.
Well, we'll see. We'll see.
What that means is that the Republican Congress will cooperate with him when it suits them.
Yeah.
And the margin is narrow enough that he's got to make accommodations with them because he needs an awful lot of votes to accomplish anything, including some from the Democrats. That brings up the interesting point of the way in which this election changes things. You know, there's always a tendency to say, oh, this changes everything.
Yeah.
And you always have to watch that because, but I think most people agree that this is pretty dramatic. And not many presidents have gotten into office having been really repudiated by their own party.
Yeah.
It happens very rarely.
Yeah.
In fact, the only two presidents who actually endorsed Donald Trump are Vladimir Putin and Kim Jong Il.
Kim Jong Un. But
Un, I guess it is now, right?
Yeah.
My point is that he's been rejected by ordinary American leaders across the board.
Yeah.
So like I say, when the Republican Congress wants to cooperate with him, it will. But he'll have a tremendous a lot of trouble getting them to fall in line.
Yeah.
But far as the way it changes the parties, I think it's very dramatic. And you don't want to overstate it, but it's worth talking about. First, the Democrats. I think that Mrs. Clinton and several other prominent people in the party tried to convince themselves and tried to convince the party that all she had to say is everything is great, just let it keep going the way it's going. And that grossly underestimates the mood of the country, even on the other side, I think.
Yeah.
Even on the other side, you might be thoroughly pleased with what Mr. Obama's done and continues to do for a couple more months. But a country as bitterly divided as this one is, I mean, I'm talking about 1856 divided.
Yeah.
It is not a pleasant place to be for anybody. We've got some very serious problems, even if you think Mr. Obama's agenda is a big success and you think he's improved things. He hasn't improved it to the degree that the biggest problem in the country right now is the fact that everybody in both parties considers the main problem to be the other half of America.
Yeah.
In other words, the main goal in politics right now is to defeat the bad guys, and by bad guys you mean the other half of America.
Yeah.
Almost literally the other 49 to 51% of America.
We don't have a grasp of the common good. I mean,
right.
Yeah. So for
Mrs. Clinton and for the others to campaign on the idea of just let the machine keep working the way it's been working is hard on people that have traditionally voted Democrat. I mentioned to somebody earlier there's all kinds of talk about the middle class vote. People unnecessarily, I think, bring race into that, I think, the white middle class angst or whatever. I mean, another interesting number from today's election, I read in a very reputable news source earlier that Donald Trump got a larger percentage of the black vote than any president since William H. Taft in 1908. That's back. In other words, that's going back to the time when black people voted Republican because of the Civil War.
Wow, that's interesting.
That's a dramatic thing. So to cast the whole thing in strict racial terms shows that you didn't learn the lesson. And one of the lessons for Democrats is that economically, these people are out of work. Blue-collar, formerly auto worker type people from all over the country who always voted Democrat. Listen to Democrats today and they hear eggheads talking about gender theory. And what they know, on the other hand, is that, Bill Clinton, for example, pushed the NAFTA and GATT and all that through. The part of Trump's message that resonates with Democrats today is the Ross Perot element. In other words, the idea that these trade agreements allowed corporations to ship all of our jobs overseas, which is why we all have to work in McDonald's now, that resonates with Democrats. So if you want to know why Democrats voted for Donald Trump, we have Trump Democrats now, if you can believe it. That's a new reality.
Yeah.
And I think it's same as the immigration issue. The part of Trump's message about immigration that resonates with Democrats, working class Democrats, is that these people work in situations where they see illegal immigrants on the job site. And if you've ever seen illegal Mexican immigrants on a job site, you know that it's just flat out all day long. I've been on these kind of job sites as a working class American myself. I mean, if you're a construction boss and you hand a Mexican immigrant, illegal or otherwise, you hand him a shovel and tell him to dig, he'll keep digging until you come back and tell him to stop.
Mm-hmm.
And these formerly Democrats, or maybe still hanging on Democrats, see this, and they know that what's going on is this. These Mexicans are not here to get our social programs. They're here to work. And
right.
Who invited them here to work? Capitalists, Republicans,
right.
Mostly.
Of course. Right.
And they did it because Americans cost too much.
Yeah.
So what good is the social safety net that Democrats spent the whole 20th century building if we're going to allow an end run around the entire thing in order to get cheap labor?
Yeah.
And so this is the part of the immigration message, Trump's anti-immigration message, which is not irrational and not racist and resonated with Democrats. This is why more Democrats voted for Trump than voted for Romney, strange as that sounds. In other words, much more moderate people like John McCain and people like that did poorer with Democrats than Donald Trump, Donald freaking Trump.
I know. It's weird. It's
so this, it's these are crazy lessons for Democrats out of yesterday's result.
You're listening to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea. We're here today with Rod Bennett, and we'll be back on Breadbox Media right after this.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
and welcome back to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea, and we're here today with Rod Bennett, and we're taking a look at the 2016 election results. I have no idea what the local results were here in Washington State. There was like a couple of things going on. You know, there was like a minimum wage thing, and there was a very,
you've been
to me,
in too much in shock to look into it today, huh?
So much in shock, just doing other stuff. I'm working on an article and I got to get it done. So
well, at least in some of these states there was a marijuana thing on the ballot, so that if you didn't like the results, you could at least go and get high and forget about it.
Yeah. Well, the big winners seem to have been killing people and getting stoned.
Yeah.
So I guess that, you know, California passed a death penalty thing. I don't know what Nebraska did. They had some death penalty thing that the thing in Nebraska was the state legislature legally and lawfully, the way legislatures are supposed to do, outlawed the death penalty. And so the, wouldn't you know it, Catholic Republican governor spent, he had $300,000 burning a hole in his pocket. Now that money could have gone for, you know, to support the pro-life movement, but what did it go for? Yes, it went to a ballot measure to reinstitute the death penalty. So
yeah,
I don't know what happened with that.
Like to quote Friedrich Nietzsche, but I will say that one of his good ones was, you should always mistrust people in whom the urge to punish is strong.
Yes, no kidding. Yes, I've already gotten, you know, recommendations. People have written me telling me that I need to be excommunicated and also kicked out of the country and, you know, things like that. So, but fortunately, that hasn't been the bulk of my mail, I'm happy to report.
Well, that's the trouble with the marijuana thing. In my day, people who smoked marijuana were kind of the live and let live variety. You know, right. They believed that liberalism involved a certain skepticism about your own opinions and a willingness to be cool, you know.
Yeah.
And nowadays, the people who seem to want the marijuana most are the people who are on a crusade to stamp out people that can't quote LGBT to the 15th place, you know.
Well, the people who want to kick me out of the church are all Trump supporters.
In other words, the combination of anger and wanting to hurt somebody and smoking dope don't seem naturally to go together to me, but apparently is the world we live in now.
Yes. Yeah.
At any rate, in case anybody's really interested, I'm going to share my prognostications about what happens to the Republican Party now.
Okay, prognosticate away.
It would have been easier to say if Trump had lost. If Trump had gone down in flames, then the party would probably have broken up into the regular Republicans would have reasserted control. And the Trumpsters would probably have gone off into Ross Perot land as far as starting up a reform party or whatever. And that reform party might very well have eventually supplanted the Republicans. But since that didn't happen, we've got a much more difficult thing to predict.
Right.
Now that he's won, all the people who calculated, you know, who went and said, who we teased about last fall, I guess, about Chris Christie and others doing the Saruman thing and going off wisely and joining Sauron because he can't be stopped, you know. I think those people are, you know, in a good position right now, obviously. They're the ones who gambled and won.
Yep.
The old party, the party that the rhinos, you know, like me, they obviously have been repudiated in some important way. In other words, their age is over now, you know. Yeah. They're relics and dinosaurs.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the whole party now is going to become, you know, the know-nothing party. You know, we're going to become the nativist, angry at the world party, you know.
Yeah.
That at least is how it would seem on the surface. I forget who it was that wrote a piece. It may have been in National Review today, where somebody said, well, now it's time for the conservatives to go. The conservatives need to leave the Republican Party now and go elsewhere.
Yeah.
Now, by conservative, what's really interesting is what they mean by conservative.
They mean limited government.
They mean strict construction of the Constitution, judges that will do all of that. You know, the Trump people don't care whether the Constitution is construed strictly or loosely. They just want the right result.
Yeah.
That's the essence of fascism. You know what the truth is. You know what the country needs to do, and it doesn't need to be voted on because that would just cloud the issue.
Yeah.
You know? So we don't need judges to construe anything. We need judges to cooperate. So the conservatism in this kind of William F. Buckley sense is now saying that we need to go and look for a place where we can be at home because now the know-nothing people are in charge of the party.
Yeah.
And that's really interesting. Obviously, mm-hmm. they don't have any place to go. You know, they're certainly not going to find a home in the Democrat Party anytime soon, even though that's where that movement started.
Right.
And that's what's really interesting historically about all of this, is that all of that stuff, conservatism in that sense, was a temporary alliance with the Republicans anyway. All of those things more naturally belong in the Jeffersonian Party, the Democrats. You know, the Jeffersonian Party was the party of limited government and states' rights and all these things for the first, you know, 150 years or more of the country's existence. And when it got excommunicated from the Democratic Party back in the, well, starting in 1948, the mid-20th century, it looked for someplace to land, looked for a new home. And thanks to Ronald Reagan, it got brought in as the Reagan Democrats, and these are the people that have made up that strict constructionist quote unquote conservative wing ever since. Historically, the Republican Party has never given a rat's you know what for conservatism. It was founded to be the party of big business, make the world safe for big business.
Right.
That's the entire meaning of the Republican Party. That's all it's ever meant.
Right.
People nowadays think, well, it's the party of free trade. It's the party of traditional values. It's the party of Orthodox Christianity. It never was any of those things.
Right.
For 150 years, the Democrats were the party of evangelical Christianity, of creationism rather than evolution, all of those things. The party of free trade was the Democrats. The Republicans were the protectionists. So there never was any natural connection between the Republican Party and conservatism in that sense. It was always a Democratic idea that found itself homeless in the Democrat Party and had to find some place to land. Well, now people are sensing that maybe it's homeless again. Because if the Republican Party goes back to just being the party of millionaires, riding the crest of nativist anger, then conservatism is homeless again in that sense. So
yeah, and
anyway,
especially of course,
that's
religious
big history
conservatism,
lesson, I guess. But it's
there's a very good talk that was given by Russell Moore. He's a Southern Baptist.
I think I saw some of this.
Yeah, the Erasmus talk that he gave a while back at the offices of First Things, or at a banquet that was hosted by First Things, I guess. But anyway, it was a talk called "Can the Religious Right Survive?" And it was his argument was basically, he was saying that the religious right is now the people that the religious right warned you about 20 years ago. And I can't argue with him. He's right. This is you know, part of what, you know, I've been grappling with. You know, my interest in this primarily is what's the impact on our faith life as Christians. And I am I don't know what to do with the fact of a religious right of a, you know, conservative Catholics who have a far higher regard for Donald Trump than they do for the Holy Father, who are, you know, the most thrilled and the most, you know, just gloating people that I've run into have been the people who have alloyed this. You know, this is one of the great dangers that always happens in our politics, because we're a nation with the soul of a church. We'll talk about this when we return. You're listening to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea. We're here today with Rod Bennett. We're talking about the election 2016. We'll be back. Connecting the Dots right after this.
If you enjoy listening to Mark Shea and all of his wonderful co-hosts here on Connecting the Dots, then consider becoming a friend of the show and provide your support today. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show. Thank you.
And welcome back to the And we are here today, as the dulcet strains of Ludwig von Beethoven go away. We're here today with Rod Bennett, and we've been talking about the election. And I think, you know, getting back to, you know, its impact on Christians. One of the things that Russell Moore was saying was that he said, we're the people that the religious right warned us about 20 years ago. And part of what he meant by that was he was saying that the time was when the religious right compared its behavior to gospel standards, to what Jesus said to do, you know. And We've now reached a point where the religious right primarily compares its behavior to what they perceive their culture war enemies to think and do. So if they do it, then it's fair for us to do.
Right.
So, you know, in other words, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, burn for burn, wound for wound, hand for hand, foot for foot.
Right.
That's a disastrous way to proceed, but that has become the way in which, and we're doing this increasingly. So, you know, lying is good when we do it.
Character doesn't count when it's our guy whose character is defective.
Right. It's fine when we do it, you know, You know, on Monday we saw a priest of Holy Church use the aborted remains of an infant for a 45-minute vote Trump infomercial. You know,
right.
And expose those remains on an altar. It was a shocking and appalling thing to do.
The greatest impact of this thing is going to be the effect that it has on the Christian church in America.
Oh, absolutely.
And I think every person who is listening to this broadcast knows somebody who's come down in their opinion because of this election, some Christian person whom they thought had better judgment.
Yeah.
I'm not encouraging you to unfriend or anything like that, but I am saying most of us, I mean, even if you're pro-Trump, I probably came down in your opinion if you're pro-Trump. But my point is that it revealed it's like the Aryan crisis not the Aryan crisis, the crisis about Theotokos at the Council of Chalcedon. Everything mm-hmm. was fine in Christendom after the Aryan crisis subsided until mm-hmm. somebody decided innocently enough to stand up and suggest that we all address a nice prayer in gratitude to the Theotokos, the mother of God. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, the surface peace, somebody stood up and said, well, mother of God, wait a minute, wait a second. What are you saying?
Yeah.
Mary was the mother of the man, Jesus.
Right.
And then you got, it was off to the races for another 100 years of persecutions and burnings and all the rest of it. Seemed like a peace on the surface was revealed to be hiding something. And it's one of the creepiest things about this terrible year we've lived through is that we all went into this year perhaps naively thinking that we had similar ideas about these things.
Yeah.
And now we know that there's people that are willing to stand up for the most grotesque sort of demagogue, the worst sort of stump speech delivering. My words messed up. Kind of Huey Long type politician that we've seen in many a moon. It's all justified in the name of abortion.
And the need to win. One of the things that there's a writer for Pathos named Scott Eric Ault. I met Scott, actually. He's a good guy.
And, he does seem like a guy with his head screwed on straight.
Yeah, he does. He's got his head screwed on right. And one of the things that he said earlier this year, which has stuck with me and has haunted me for the rest of the year, he said for years as a conservative Christian, he heard from people on the left who said, you guys are just closet racists and you need to really face that fact. And his very sincere and my very sincere response to that accusation was, that is not what we're about. And he said,
you're misjudging us.
Right.
Yeah, maybe there's a few fringy nuts who would vote for a fascist right. who says he wants torture in so many words and
right.
not to get information, but because they deserve it.
Because they have it coming, you know. But he said for years, he said, in all sincerity, that's not what we're about. And he said for this year, he found himself, to his astonishment, repeatedly being forced to tell fellow conservative Christians, that's not what we're about.
Right. And it's creepy. I personally was unfriended on Facebook by several very intelligent figures within this sort of Catholic convert-type movement. Mm-hmm. People I would never have guessed, unfriended for the mildest kind of anti-Trump thing that I was saying a year ago.
Yeah.
I was suddenly unfriended by more than one, a guy that I used to talk classical music with.
Hmm.
So not some kind of nutter, you know?
Yeah, I know. It's
and,
amazing.
Very, very strange experience. And I think it has been for everybody.
Well, and I hate to say it, but one of the effects that I've seen, and it's been a consistent one, and I don't see the pattern changing, is that, when it comes to Trump, you dance to his tune. He does not dance to yours.
Yes.
And so if you are useful to him, then you're part of the thing. And so what I see happening, and I've seen happening repeatedly up to and including, making excuses for sexual assault, has been, I have watched pro-life Trump supporters repeatedly completely give away the farm in order to defend this guy. And I remain convinced that they will get nothing in return. And in the meantime, what they'll be remembered for is, racist remarks. Well, we have to contextualize that. Grabbing women's genitals. Well, we have to understand blah, 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 and et cetera, right. et cetera. And we will see every excuse in the book made for that guy.
Well,
for
I
the
think
next
they
three years.
Accelerated to the generation gap between young Christians and older Christians.
Yeah,
the people
I mean,
who were tottering on the brink and weren't sure about gay marriage and all that sort of thing. They've shoved them right off the boat.
Yep, that generation is gone, you know.
Yeah, and I'm right off the boat. I don't know how much time we've got left, but I made an oblique analogy to 1856 earlier in the program, and I think it may be the key to a lot of things.
Stupid James Buchanan.
back in the days leading up to the Civil War, the issue, of course, was slavery.
Uh-huh.
And a calculation was made on the part of anti-slavery people, not just in the North, but in parts of the South as well. Anti-slavery people made the calculation. They moved from Jefferson's position, which was that slavery is this evil that we've inherited from the past, and we need to begin phasing it out in the quickest way we can without destroying the country. They moved from that into a position of people who are willing to compromise with this are evil.
Right.
And if they are evil, you don't have to listen to anything else they say.
Yeah.
Not only do you not have to compromise with them anymore, it's actually evil on your part to compromise with them.
Right.
But the whole idea of having a country with people you disagree with is you have to compromise. You compromise because the only alternative is to start killing each other.
Right.
You have to keep talking to them. But once you've made this calculation of people who hold this opinion are not worth listening to, then you make democracy impossible. In other words, no matter what else Hillary Clinton said, because she's pro-choice, she's just evil. And because Trump was willing to mouth the opposite opinion, we can continue to listen to him. In other words, the worst quote-unquote pro-lifer is better than the best pro-choicer.
Right.
If you see what I'm saying.
Oh, yeah.
So this is how we did the calculus, that no matter how bad Donald Trump turned out to be, and he just got worse and worse. We spent the whole year looking for the bottom, you know.
Yeah.
No matter how bad he turns out to be, he will always be better than a damn pro-choicer.
Well, and that's the great mistake. That's the great this is what I was trying to get at when I said that the new soteriology, the new theology of salvation that conservative Christians have embraced is opposition to abortion taketh away the sins of the world. You can do anything as long as you say something vague about abortion, you know, and that's really it.
And I want our pro-life friends to understand that I agree with them. A Holocaust is happening.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I agree that the horror of the thing is tremendous. I think people have, like with slavery, people are being driven kind of out of their minds by the horror of it.
Sure, sure.
And I think that it is worth talking about another time. But
yeah,
I think that's what's going on here. I think just as in the 1850s, the country is being driven a little mad by trying to justify a moral catastrophe.
Right.
And finding that politics no longer work anymore in that scenario.
We are out of time, but I want to thank you so much for being on the show today. You've been listening to Connecting the Dots. My co-host today was Mr. Rod Bennett. Our producer was Danny Head, and I will be back tomorrow with Mr. Doug O'Brien. Until then, have a good evening. Bye-bye.
So long, everybody.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcasts. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.